Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, and Kara, of course, there's a new Spider-Man film out.
Is there?
It is. It's called Brand New Day. And it's revived the debate about who is the Spider-Goat, the greatest Spider-Man of all time. You have Tobey Maguire.
Yes.
You have Andrew Garfield.
Uh-huh.
And you have Tom Holland.
So live-action Spider-Man is what we're talking about.
Okay. I think so.
And not counting the 70s Nicholas What-His-Face did him in the 70s.
I can't imagine What-His-Face is going to be your number one.
Probably not.
No. Okay. So where do you land?
I'll start by saying that I think all three of them are good.
I agree. It's hard.
They're all good. It's Andrew Garfield, I think, was not well served with scripts.
Right.
But yeah, it's hard to say Tom Holland is not the greatest.
I think, like on House Hunters, and they've looked at three houses, and they always start by getting rid of one.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, but the material isn't there for him to be the best. And so it really comes down to Tobey Maguire, the OG, and Tom Holland.
Yeah.
And the first two Maguire films are so good.
Mm-hmm. And then the third one's a bit of a clunker.
It really is. And Maguire sometimes looks a little too old.
Yes, there's that as well. I think Holland, particularly in the earlier films when he was first cast, he very much had kind of that youthfulness of the character.
I feel Tom Holland probably has the edge right now.
Yeah.
And that might be recency bias, but I think his films have been more consistently
good. He's not had a clunker like Spider-Man 3.
Right, and he's super charming in the role. Kara, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any reason?
I mean, Tobey is nostalgic for me. That's my first Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, the charisma that Tom Holland has for that character, it works.
Yeah. So if we're generally agreed that Tom Holland is the greatest Spider-Man, I guess the next thing to talk about is just how good or not is Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Yep, which is what we'll be doing up next on Pop Shop.
Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
Welcome to Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the world off of it.
And we've got an amazing, maybe even a spectacular show for you today, as we are talking about Spider-Man Brand New Day.
As always, if you're enjoying the program, be sure to like, to subscribe, and to turn on the old notification machine, and that way you won't miss a single thing.
The notification machine?
Sure.
Okay. As always, Pop Shop is brought to you by our friends at the F.M. Kirby Center, and we'll be talking with Neil about what's going on there in just a little bit.
But before Neil gets here, Patrick, of course, we have a moment where we can start talking about the film in a spoiler-free way for the first half of the show. So Spider-Man Brand New Day is set in a world in which nobody remembers Peter Parker. It's complicated, but Doctor Strange cast a spell at the end of the final movie and nobody can remember him. And it's kind of traumatic for Peter. And so he's working through his trauma in part by throwing himself into his work as Spider-Man. And he's been quite successful. But in this film, he gets drawn into a mystery that's going to change his life perhaps forever. He's going to run into a bunch of well-established MCU characters. He is going to confront a shadowy government agency in the form of the damage control. And he's going to meet a very powerful new character that may or may not be quite what she seems to be on the surface. He's going to do all of this, of course, while also balancing what Peter Parker always has to balance, a very complicated personal life in which he has to decide if and or how to reunite with his ex-girlfriend MJ and his ex-best friend Ned.
And so we've got a lot of our returning favorites. Of course, Tom Holland as Spider-Man. We've got Zendaya coming back as MJ. Jacob Batalon coming back as Ned Leeds. In terms of MCU people, we've got Jon Bernthal returns as the Punisher. And Mark Ruffalo returns as the Hulk, both of which we've seen in the trailer. There may be another MCU cameo that we won't talk about yet because it's a spoiler. And then, of course, Sadie Sink plays a yet-to-be-revealed role in the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of suspense building about that. So as you kind of, as I went through the plot and then you, Patrick, talked through the list of characters, there's a lot going on in this film. And so one of the things that struck me as I was watching the film is I think there's a couple of kinds of challenges that come with making any film in the MCU universe.
Yes, and it's how do you beat the greatness of the previous film?
surprisingly not on my list, as it turns out. I do like your victory sip you just took. It was like very emphatic. Well done. Well done, sir. So one of them is, I think, to make a film in the MCU universe, it's often hard to focus on the present because you're beholden to the past and to the future in very specific ways. So this is the fourth Tom Holland Spider-Man film. So this film has to be true to all of that backstory, plus all of the other stuff that Tom Holland's Spider-Man has shown up in the MCU. And let's be honest, the entire MCU world-building lore, right? And so like it has to fit neatly with a very complicated world that's been built. And then almost all of these films also have to look forward to set up what's coming next. And I think sometimes these films struggle finding a story in the present that feels like a self-contained story. Do you feel like this film does a successful job of kind of navigating being faithful to the source material, clearly setting up where Marvel is going next, and yet managing to tell a successful story?
I think by and large it does. There are a couple elements from the greater MCU that I think could have easily have been disposed of and don't really add a lot to it. But I think one of the things that I do really like is the way, thanks to Doctor Strange's spell, it kind of draws a line between this film and what came before.
Right.
In that, in a lot of ways, Peter Parker is kind of starting over in this movie and starting over in a lot of ways as a much more classic Spider-Man. And so I thought that worked pretty effectively. I think also the creators of the film were smart in that what largely propels the film is kind of Peter's character arc in terms of his struggles with his loneliness and also his struggles with his powers as well. I thought kind of having it be more character-based, I thought gave the film enough of an identity of its own that it didn't feel like it was being pulled in too many directions.
I agree with you. Although there were a few moments where it felt overstuffed.
Yeah, it does.
In
it
ways
does.
That, for me, I could have used a little bit more of Peter and MJ in their relationship in this film. And honestly, my favorite scene in the film, I think, is when the three friends, Spider-Man, Ned, and MJ, are just sitting around in the apartment, just kind of having ridiculous conversations. That kind of chemistry really works well, and I think is such a classic marker of a good Spider-Man film. That, like, I wouldn't have minded a little bit more cleared out for that, but I also think overall the film does a good job of being a standalone film.
I mean, they kind of, it is nice, again, the way the film works in terms of drawing that line between the previous films. It does kind of give Tom Holland Spider-Man, even though this is his fourth Spider-Man film and I don't even know, seventh or eighth Marvel movie period, it does kind of give this a fresh start. I think also one of the things I find really interesting, and this is one of my theories about it, is that we obviously get kind of a four-year jump at the beginning of the film. And one of the things I really wonder is if because of that four-year jump, that means the film is actually taking place in 2029 based on where Marvel is. And makes me wonder if everything that happens in this film is actually going to be after Avengers Doomsday and after Avengers Secret Wars. And that we're actually into a totally separate, or kind of the future of the MCU already.
There's been, one of the interesting things about an MCU release is how much speculating and theorizing then goes on. So there's a second challenge, I think, to making a Marvel movie that might be worth talking about. And that is, at least for me, I want a movie that feels like it's true to comic books. A film that feels like it takes its source material seriously or respectfully. And I think this film does that really beautifully in a couple of ways. So briefly, there's a cliche in filmmaking now, I think, whenever you go to a superhero film or an action-adventure film, that at the moment when the action is the fastest and the most frenetic, the camera's going to slow down. So you get slow motion action scenes over and over. It's done so often, we just assume that's how you shoot scenes.
I blame Michael Bay for that.
But Michael Bay is probably not entirely blameless. But we take it for granted now. And so when it happens in a film, it doesn't seem special to me anymore. But this film did something a little bit different in a couple of scenes where the camera actually moves so slowly that for a moment it feels like you're not looking at a moving image, but you're looking at a still image. I'll give you a couple of examples. There's the scene where Spider-Man is battling the Hulk, and the building is kind of crumbling, and the Hulk falls backward out of the building, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the camera cuts way back. So you're looking at a long shot of the mm-hmm. Hulk falling backwards, and it almost stops in this way that totally reminds me of a splash page in a comic book. That's just like, it's a beautiful image that doesn't even need to move to work.
Yeah.
I think in the trailer we all saw that work with the hand as well. There's a couple of moments where the hand are mobilizing these red-clad ninjas to attack Spider-Man.
And the montage that includes Boomerang and Tarantula, which all of those are actually based on actual comic covers.
Right. And that there's again, this moment where it stops.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can't remember the last time I watched a movie and I thought, that feels like reading a comic book without kind of Zack Snydering it and making it just like panel for panel.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
They did a nice job of kind of respecting or kind of showing respect to the comics in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So any other challenges that you want to talk about?
Well, I think the one place you mentioned the hand, and that's one of the elements that I felt the film largely could have done without. Mm-hmm. In that they don't really serve much of a purpose, that you couldn't have just had more damage control or amped up damage control security guards. And it kind of, that's one of the two elements that felt a little bit random to me in terms of like, there's no need to have the hand in this film at all.
And yet when you see how beautiful it looks, when you shoot it, I can see the temptation as a filmmaker to say, imagine what I can do with this. 'Cause they're essentially like street dancing ninjas or whatever.
Yeah,
like there's a tremendous choreography to what they're doing.
The other part of it, too, is that the hand that we get in this film and the Punisher that we get in this film are very different from the hand and the Punisher that we've gotten in the Daredevil series on Netflix and Disney Plus. They are very, very much a PG-13 version. So they felt a little bit watered down to me.
I think if you're really enmeshed in the TV universe, it was the Punisher is kind of jarringly kind, or not kind, but like cleaned up.
Yeah.
Like he's clearly put on his best clothes for the appearance on the big screen.
Yeah. So it's a little bit watered down for me. So
yeah. But you know what's never watered down?
Oh, I think I do.
A visit from Neil.
That's right.
From the FM Kirby Center. And I think I hear him knocking on the door right now.
Yep. So we'll be talking with him in just a moment. And we're here with Neil from the FM Kirby Center to talk to us about all the things going on there.
That's right. Man, oh man, I'm excited. I love the new Spider-Man. So we'll see how everyone's feeling about it at home as you're listening. I don't know. But that being said, we have some great movies over at the FM Kirby Center happening just this week and in the next few weeks. We've had them all summer long, but coming up this week, we're so excited. We're actually wrapping up our great Camp United as well as Big Screen Summer Series with a really fun kids film, Space Jam, the 94 edition, you know, with Michael Jordan.
I said the original.
That's right.
I've never seen that movie.
You've never seen
it? How embarrassing is that?
Have you seen Space Jam 2 with LeBron?
I did not.
Okay.
All right. Well, it would be more embarrassing if you only saw that one. But I do recommend you can easily, readily fix this problem by coming over to the FM Kirby Center on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. You can see Space Jam with all of your friends. See Michael Jordan play against the Monstars with Bugs Bunny. Or Bad Bunny. Who knows? But Bugs Bunny. It will be a great time, and I recommend coming to check it out. Bring your kids, because kids 12 and under get in free, which is absolutely amazing. And then on Wednesday, we have our Curtis Mont series. It's actually wrapping up for the summer. We have a special double screening. We have at 1 p.m. and at 7 p.m., we have Marty Supreme, which is a phenomenal new film.
Marty Supreme is a really good film. If you've not seen it, you should see it. It's kind of changed my mind about Timmy Chalamet a little bit, actually. Yeah.
Did it change how you pronounce his name? Because you kind of just butchered it.
Did I do it again? At one point on the show, we started calling him by a different name, Neil, and I never remember what his actual name is.
I always enjoyed, Florence Pugh says that they call him like Chalamet Ding Dong. I was like, that's a fun one.
Timmy Chalamet. Totally changed my respect for Timmy Chalamet.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And so, but that one, again, it's only 5 p.m. if you come in the afternoon, $7 in the evening, but still, to get that and see it inside of a beautiful, large Art Deco theater, the Kirby Center was built as a grand movie palace, and it's still here, and it's been preserved, and you can come right to downtown Wilkes-Barre and enjoy a movie the way it's meant to be seen, on the big screen, which is the coolest
thing. And Marty Supreme is a film that deserves to be in that kind of venue, on that kind of screen.
100%. I mean, the Curtis Mont series celebrates the best in independent documentary and foreign film. We've had a great lineup this year, and this one especially. What a phenomenal film. We're excited to show it. You know, the Kirby's always been about bringing great arts, culture, and entertainment to the region, and this is no different.
Yeah. Well, we are so lucky in the community to have a theater bringing in this kind of independent.
Hey, we're lucky to have you guys. I love the show. I mean, you guys hear me say that a bunch. Other times you hear Gene say it, but it's true.
Well, we can never hear it enough.
That's true. Yeah. So, thanks so much, Neil,
thank you
for
so
being
much.
With us.
Awesome.
Thanks so much, Neil. Always a pleasure to have you here. And now, Patrick, we return to Spider-Man.
Yes, we do. Yep, and we're going to talk about our thoughts on the film in terms of various aspects of it that stood out to us. And so fair warning that now we are entering a spoiler-filled zone where we're going to talk about things that happen in the film that you may not know if you haven't seen it.
Yes. So one of the things that's going on in this film that a lot of people are talking about is that it's a back-to-basics Peter Parker, that this is a Peter Parker without Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. And the technology and the wealth.
Though I think he does still have like a fabricator machine there. It's not quite as perfectly a back to basics as I might have liked.
I don't have a lot of complaints about the film, but a quibble for me is I would have liked an even more basicer Peter Parker. And I think they missed an opportunity had they leaned more into his mutation and used it as a way to get around some of the power upgrades he needed. Yeah. That would have been a way to make him even more of a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, Spider-Man grounded in the streets.
Yeah, I do. In terms of the mutation is another part of the story. In terms of talking about the film being overstuffed, I felt like his struggle with the mutation and, you know, is he going to be, you know, is he Peter Parker? Is he a Spider-Man? I don't think that had quite enough room to breathe, particularly for his moment where he says both. To be as powerful as it could be. That's where I did feel there was a little bit too much going on around to take away from that. One of the things I do really like is I love the costume in this film.
Yeah.
That, you know, particularly when you think back to the early days of you know, superhero movies, we veered so far away from anything looking like the spandex costumes that heroes wear.
Right.
And I love that the costume here looks like the kind of spandex costume he would have in the comics with the big, bulky, clunky kind of mechanical web shooters. I loved everything about the costume and how it looked on this film.
To go back to the point about that kind of identity struggle, like am I Peter or am I Spider-Man? Mm-hmm. Really in the 1980s, probably comic books started sort of interrogating sort of that issue of identity and masks and, you know, who's the real person, Batman or Bruce Wayne, Spider-Man or Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing to wrestle with, I think. Yeah. The resolution to me felt, it came so easily and so quickly that again, because we had to do so much else in the film. Yeah. I think a film that kind of stripped it down to that question and focused more on Peter and his friends in the context of that question might have been an even more effective film.
Yeah, and that's where things like The Hand and As Much As I Love Her, Florence Pugh's Yelena, did not feel like they really needed to be in this film.
Although the spider toes in the bathhouse or like a very funny it moment. Like I'm not sure how much the Punisher is necessary. Although like obviously when you take the Punisher and Spidey, who are such different heroes, there's like that kind of road trip energy.
Yes, they do have kind of their buddy cop film kind of energy with each other, with maybe a few more swears plopped in there. But there's
if you've ever seen Midnight Run, I would say they're fine on the swearing.
Yelena and The Hand are probably the two elements from the MCU that I'm like, oh, this film could have done without them. As much as I love Florence Pugh in the role of Yelena, I'm like, he easily could have found that information on the web.
Right, but
or something else.
The three friends have such chemistry.
Yes.
That I think it's a tragedy in a film that long. Yeah. They just don't have more time because that I could watch forever.
Yeah.
What does Spider-Man do when he needs to use the restroom and he's swinging from rooftop to rooftop? Like, it's a good question on Ned's part and it's just fun.
Yeah, it's possible that when he and Ned were bonding with each other playing, building Lego and dueling quotes from like Lord of the Rings, that moment might have resonated with me quite a bit.
Were you like, I could have been Spider-Man. But for a spider bite.
I'm probably Ned, which is fine.
You say that sadly, probably Ned. I think Ned has got a lot of hero in him.
I do.
Don't sell yourself short.
One of the other things I find really interesting in the film, speaking of the relationship with the friends, is the fact that obviously we get the handshake moment at the end that kind of seems to be read as Ned is now remembering who Peter is.
Right.
And it made me think of like, you know, Ned developed Spider Tracker. He's still very much connected to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I found really interesting the fact that Ned clearly seems to have some subconscious knowledge of the previous relationship, but MJ has nothing.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people online are speculating that it's the big surprise Sadie Sink character that unlocks something.
Yes, that's one of the theories.
Whether we buy that or not is another thing. Yeah. But so Sadie Sink does show up as Jean Grey.
Yes.
So obviously, I mean, not that anybody didn't know this, right? The X-Men are clearly coming in the MCU. It's only a matter of time.
Yes. And it's almost as if in this film, Marvel is finally doing what we said they should have done after Endgame, which is pivoting to mutants.
Why didn't they pay attention to us?
I don't know.
I mean, we've got the successful podcast.
It's very upsetting.
I'm sure Kara has sent many, many invitations to the Marvel Cinematic Universe bigwigs.
If not angry letters on our behalf.
That's right.
You know, explaining what they should be doing.
Dear Marvel, Patrick and Alan don't know I'm writing, but I have to share this with you. They're mad.
So, as a lifelong X-Men fan, what did you make of this means of introducing Jean Grey? Because it's a very interesting way of introducing Jean Grey.
And it's also not necessarily canonical, right?
It's not. I mean, it's like they kind of did with some of the other characters. It's a blend of her traditional version and the ultimate version. Because I think the bit about the mother abandoning her when she got her powers, I think that's from the ultimate version.
Yeah. So I would say this. I thought Sadie Sink was pretty close to brilliant film. I think
she is the way Tom Holland was when he started. She is an amazing actor.
The humanity she brings to a young woman kind of going through this crisis and this trauma. I just, like, if you're going to pick somebody to build the X-Men franchise around, I think Sadie Sink is a great choice. Mm-hmm. And I left the movie thinking, how cool would it be if the next X-Men franchise focused more on Jean's story, or told the story from the perspective of her, a woman. Yeah. Like, obviously, when X-Men hit big in the late 70s and the early 1980s, it was Wolverine that was the breakout star. When it transitioned to the big screen, it was Hugh Jackman. Whenever he was on screen, it was always about him. And I can understand why, for various reasons, Wolverine broke out and people celebrated Hugh Jackman. But it always made some of the female characters seem secondary.
Yeah.
That, you know, they kind of revolve around
Very different from the
Wolverine.
Comics, though, in which that it was very much a female-led team, particularly in the 80s.
And I just think that if they can use Sadie Sink and they can tell stories like that, we still await the proper telling of the Phoenix story, I think. I don't think on film it's ever been given justice. And if anybody can pull it off at Sadie Sink, I hope that the writers can kind of lean into that and make the X-Men kind of Jean story in a way that I think would make it more interesting.
Yeah. At the same time, it is a weird way to kind of introduce Jean and mutants kind of larger within the MCU, because she is pretty much a menace in this film.
Can I respond to that real quickly?
Sure.
I think it sets up, if they want to, the classic trope of the X-Men, feared and hated.
Yeah, except
that Jean Grey will be remembered for this, and thus all of a sudden you've got a mutant crisis in the MCU.
Except that there is a more legitimate reason to fear and hate Jean Grey for what she did than there is in the comics. Like Jean, I mean, there's the guy that gets hit by the car, but for him showing up in the final credits to show that he's okay.
Yeah.
We don't know but you know, the tank driving through town.
Yeah, no.
Like, she at least committed several attempted murders.
Well, I mean, Jean Grey does eventually obliterate a planet full of living beings.
That's true, but, you know, that's a much later Jean Grey.
It's fair.
The other thing that I find really interesting is that Peter has developed the inhibitor chip that could be used to suppress mutant powers. That seems like the kind of thing that Peter might feel, a certain kind of responsibility for.
Yeah, well, it sets up inhibitor collars, which have long been part of the X-Men universe.
Yeah.
You know, VMAX sort of had echoes of a Cerebro, maybe? Mm-hmm. Like, is it possible that technology is going to get repurposed to but, like, I liked the way, and I know you think I'm an X-Men homer. I liked the way it seeded it. And, like, Jean's powers were not quite what I was expecting them to be, and her story was not quite what I was expecting it to be. But I see the potential in it.
I found interesting, because in the comics, Jean started out being a telekinetic and then developed telepathy later on.
Right.
They flipped that in the film. She starts out as a telepath, and then she develops...
Do you think that has
telekinesis
meaning? Like, does it matter in some way, or they're just playing around with the story?
I think they're just playing around with the story. Yeah. And showing that because of what damage control did to her, they made her even more dangerous.
Right.
A figure.
Well, in many ways, like, when she does the damage, it's because she's being tortured.
Yeah.
Like, there is at least, I guess, a kind of explanation. Although not that we should explain away Yeah. The way she mistreats
it's a muddier version of Jean Grey than one would normally expect.
I'm okay with muddy.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of muddy, you know what's never muddy on this podcast? The Final Judgment.
Oh, that's right.
Because we take the complexities of pop culture.
That's right.
And we pretend like it can all be boiled down to a simple pop or shop.
That's right.
Pop, we should go out and consume it, or shop, we should find something else. Although it will be hard to do, as you guys are both filling out your paddles. It's on track to make $2 billion, I think, in its second week. So if we're shopping, I think it's going to make a lot of people angry.
Yes.
I saw you drawing a big O there. So they both have an O in them.
They both have
O's.
Never mind. They do share a number of letters.
I can spell.
you're really good at
me this. Smart.
Yeah. It's a good thing you don't teach English.
All right. Yeah.
So, yes, Kara, do you want to start us off?
I think Kara should start us off.
With Pop or Shop.
First, Kara, did see the movie, right?
No. Yes, I did.
Oh. Did you stay awake through the movie? Because that's a huge...
Okay. We're not going to keep using that because it was one time. One time. Okay.
It's just a good barometer for the film.
Sure, if you say so. I am going to obviously pop it.
Okay,
popping. Okay.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I know, Alan, your concerns about the slow motion scenes. I thought for this film, it served its purpose.
I should be clear. That's what I was trying to say.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying, just even be able to see the intricacies of how complicated those fight scenes are and to see it slowed down in that way, I thought was really interesting. I thought the storyline was great. I like Yelena and Frank being in there, and I like how Peter calls them by their first name. It shows that he sees them as humans first rather than, their characters. And I think Yelena's purpose in there, Thunderbolts was about grief and loneliness. Mm-hmm. And I think the writers and producers kind of understood the assignment, as the kids would say, by putting her in there and sort of helping Peter figure out some things. But yeah, I absolutely enjoyed it.
Excellent. One of the great things about having Kara on the show is she is teaching me what the kids are saying now.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, keep me fresh and on the cutting edge.
That's right.
I don't know about that, but okay.
Well, more so than us.
Yes.
We are not as in touch with what the youth feel these days.
You don't think we're off the chain anymore?
I don't think they say off the chain anymore.
No, I don't think so.
And that is no cap.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Are you next to me? You have your paddle ready.
Yeah, so I do want to say you mentioned kind of the creators from the film. I do have to say another thing that I feel bad about is the director of the film, who is having one of the most successful weeks, is also the director of the Wonder Man series that got canceled the same day the movie came out. I'm like,
and that Wonder Man series was very good.
Very upset. I'm like, why couldn't Marvel have waited until like a few weeks later to make that announcement?
It would sting a little bit. Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Okay, what are you thinking?
It is. I'm with Kara. It is a pop for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. I think some of the praise of the film might be a little bit overblown. It's not the best thing in the MCU, but it's definitely above the mushy middle for me. So, it's definitely a pop. It's a great film, particularly. It may be the best film we've had post Endgame.
And I've seen some people putting it on the S tier, as the kids would say. It's not, but I think it's like the next level down for me, which is above the mushy middle, but not the best of what it's created. Yeah. Oh, which means, of course, that I'm doing a pop with a smiley face.
Okay.
Because I think it's just a fun movie.
It is a fun movie.
It's been a while since you could just go to one of these movies and just sort of have fun with it. And I think like there's a lot of fun to be had. It's funny enough to kind of balance out the really sad parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I think as a show, we totally agree. This is a 100% pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to thank anybody, Patrick, at this point.
Sure. We want to thank the FM Kirby Center for sponsoring Pop Shop.
And we want to thank all the people, of course, who are watching the podcast.
Oh, yes. And of course, liking it and subscribing to the show and turning on notifications as we speak.
The notificationator machine.
This is going so great.
We're landing it. Yeah. So next week, Patrick, what are we talking about?
We will be talking about Ted Lasso, which is returning for a long-delayed fourth season.
After a decade, we're finally going to talk about soccer on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, come join the party.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.